You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. Gather together, brothers and sisters. Gather together. There's strength in numbers. Help one another. Love one another with true love. The kind that comes from Yahweh, not the kind that comes from the devil and his lustful children. You know, in the area that I live in, people don't like to talk to one another. You walk down the sidewalk, and if you say hello to them, they think you're crazy for saying hello. It's quite antisocial. So I've gone out of my way to, when I see our people, I try to say hello. I don't try to get in big conversations with these people all the time, because they're not ready for that yet, it seems. But we must begin to be friendly to our people, to show them that we recognize them. You know, I don't recognize other people that are in this country that don't belong here. I don't want them here. But I do recognize my brothers and sisters, and I think we all should begin to move in that direction. The title of this message is A Hit Piece. Now, before I go on why it's called a hit piece, is I'm going to go through the Hitler speech that Andy had read on the Founding Fathers show, and I'm going to comment on it because I think it's worth doing. And I think that you will find out that Hitler is nothing like you thought he was. You know, as I said before, when I was a child, I used to, from time to time, see these little blurbs of Hitler screaming before the people. And the assumption that the Jew wanted you to know was that he was spewing all kinds of hate, all kinds of evil, all kinds of talk about taking over the whole of Europe. And it's just not true, ladies and gentlemen, and you're going to find that out today. If you don't already know it, if you haven't already looked into the speeches of Hitler that have been translated, you will know today that this man was very intelligent, that he was very aware of the world situation, whereas all the other leaders, though they were aware because of their Freemasonic things, they were on the side of the Jew. So you will see just how intelligent this man is. And he's talking common sense, whereas all the other leaders of the time of World War I and World War II were not speaking with common sense. So before I go into that, I've already told you about the book that I've been reading. And it's called the Original Mr. Jacobs. I must tell you, I cannot say enough about this book. This man has common sense, intelligence. He went over to Europe. He went around finding out about what happened with the Jews. He wanted to get the real skinny on the situation. Not the hearsay, but the real deal. And I know now why these Jews wanted to get this book off the market as quickly as they possibly could. They wanted to buy the plates for this man, and they offered him any price that he would like or demand. And ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the few men, real men, in the world at that time, because he did not take the price. He did not give up the plates to the book. He loved loved the people of the world and wanted them to know what the real story was, what kind of danger they were in. The price wasn't worth it, no matter what the price was. This guy is above any politician that's in your country, ladies and gentlemen, in the sense where he's not a sellout. His life was put in danger, but neither here nor there. I'm going to get on with the first quote. I find this rather amusing, and to be so true, it's just remarkable. This is from page 13 of the Original Mr. Jacobs. Quote, "The Jew is insolent, never proud. He never gets beyond what is termed cheek. The Rothschilds and others of the same class, notwithstanding their millions, appear little better than dealers in cast-off clothing. Their women," now listen to this, this is just remarkable right here. You ready for this? I'm going to shut off my Skype because... too many messages coming through. They're not listening to the show, so I'll just shut that off. Okay, let me go on. Now, listen to this. "Their women, with all their diamonds, always look like vendors of toilet articles, clothed in gaudy garments." That speaks of Jewesses like to the T. Listen again. "Their women, with all their diamonds, always look like vendors of toilet articles, clothed in gaudy garments. Equality, the first condition of social intercourse, is lacking among Jews. The Jewlet, this remark, be well kept in mind, will never be the equal of the Gentile. He either cringes before you, or seeks to crush you. He is either above you or below you, never your equal." Now, when you know that, let me point out something about these Jewesses. Did you ever notice how badly they want to be Israelites? How badly they want to be our women? That they mostly all color their hair blonde and wear color-changing contacts to look like our women. But no matter how they try, this is what happens. Their women, with all their diamonds, always look like vendors of toilet articles, clothed in gaudy garments. I'd say that nails it about right to the T. Ostentatious, you know. They're a facsimile, but they're not the real thing. They could never be the real thing. They don't have what it takes to be the real thing. Okay, now this is extremely important. This, ladies and gentlemen, will explain to you why the Jews are in the positions they are in your countries. Now, this is from page 88 of the original Mr. Jacobs. In 1489, the year when it was reported that the Jews were again to be banished, a famous rabbi wrote, in the name of his brothers, to the rabbis of Constantinople, seeking advice as to what ought to be done. And the following letter, dated the 21st of December, 1489, was received. Now, look how they love to play the game here. For the first line, well, beloved brothers in Moses. Oh, they sure love to pretend. We have received your letter, in which you enumerate the misfortunes and the wrongs you suffer. These have troubled us deeply, as they have you. But the advice of the greatest rabbis and the governors of your race is this. The governors of your race, they said this. The governors of your race is this. Now listen very, very careful. You say that the king of France wishes you to become Christians. Do so, since you cannot do otherwise, but keep always the law of Moses in your heart. They knew this letter would be written somehow, read somehow, so they didn't say the Talmud. You notice that they the pretense right there. Okay, listen to this now. Pay attention to this. You say that the Gentiles wish to take your property away, make your sons merchants, and through traffic you will, little by little, get their riches and possessions. You complain that they plot against your life, make your children physicians and apothecaries, which will enable them to poison and kill the Gentiles without fear of detection or punishment. I hope you're listening to this right now, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're getting, I've been waiting to find this for a while. I've heard about this and I've read it somewhere before. And this is exactly what has happened. So don't try to tell me it's some kind of conspiracy theory, because they are all physicians and apothecaries. They are merchants. And whatever else I'm going to read right here. You say your synagogues are being destroyed. Make your children priests, and they will be able to destroy the churches of our enemies. Have they made themselves priests, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, yes, they have. As to what you say, that you endure great vexations, make your children lawyers and notaries, and urge upon them to apparently embrace public affairs, and in this way you will dominate the Gentiles, get their lands, and avenge yourselves upon them. Do not neglect the advice we give you, because experience will teach you that from being low, you will attain a lofty eminence. This is from the Prince of the Jews of Constantinople, 1489. So let's just get this quickly straight here. He told them, first to become, make your sons merchants, and through traffic you will little by little get their riches and possessions. Have they done that, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, they have. Make your children physicians and apothecaries, which will enable them to poison and kill the Gentiles without fear of detection or punishment. Have they done that, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, they have. Make your children priests, and they will be able to destroy the churches of our enemies. Well, they're teaching the Jewish version of Christianity now in America and other places of the world, all the Christian countries, and the Council of Churches, the National Council of Churches, and the World Council of Churches is a communist organization. Have they done it, ladies and gentlemen? The Catholic religion, whatever it is anyway, the Pope wears a yarmulke. And he bows to the Jews. Have they done it, ladies and gentlemen? Make your children lawyers and notaries, and urge upon them to apparently embrace public affairs. Apparently. We're acting again. Apparently embrace public affairs. And in this way, you will dominate the Gentiles, get their lands, and avenge yourselves upon them. Now, I don't even have to say about usury being bankers, because they already were usurers. Note this is coming from Constantinople, which is, I believe, the Byzantine Empire. Okay, so that's all I have to say about that. I was very happy to find that, and I thank Yahweh for this. And now the moment you've been waiting for. This is Adolf Hitler's speech from Munich, July 28th, 1922. I believe it's his second speech. It is a battle which began 120 years ago at the moment when the Jew was granted citizen rights in the European states. So notice, right away the battle began the moment when the Jew was granted citizens' rights. Same thing in America, ladies and gentlemen. Same thing everywhere. Same old song and dance, my friend. The political emancipation of the Jews was the beginning of an attack of delirium, for thereby they were given full citizen rights and equality to a people which was much more clearly and definitely a race apart from all others, that has always formed and will form a state within a state. That did not happen perhaps at one blow, but it came about as things come about today and always do come about. First a little finger, then a second, and a third, and so bit by bit, until at last people that in the 18th century still appeared completely alien had won equal citizen rights with ourselves. You see, this is the tool of the devil I keep telling you about, gradualism. See, they do it, as Mo said, slowly I turn, inch by inch, step by step. Remember I told you about how the cat hunts, how it moves just a little at a time towards the birds, and they don't see things changing around them, so they're not alerted, and finally the cat springs out and grabs the bird in his mouth and walks across the yard. Yes, this is a technique that has been working for a long time. Thanks be to Yahweh, though. At this point, they are rushing, and they are making too many mistakes now. And they're in a fear frenzy, and they're going to go down. Yes. So, they became citizens, is what he's saying here. And it was precisely the same in the economic sphere. The vast process of the industrialization of peoples meant the confluence of great masses of workmen in the towns. Thus great hordes of people arose, and these, more's the pity, were not properly dealt with by those whose moral duty it was to concern themselves for their welfare. You see, we did not take action even at that point. We talk about people not taking action now. Well, they didn't take action then. Parallel with this was a gradual, there it is again, modification of the whole nation's labor strength, share capital, was in the ascendant. And thus, bit by bit, the stock exchange came to control the whole national economy. The stock exchange. You know, in the book I was just quoting from, the stock exchange, he talks about the stock exchange used to be full of honest men. And then it changed when the Jews became citizens. And he says, isn't that true of the New York Stock Exchange as well? Speculation, ladies and gentlemen, speculation is the most dangerous thing. This is what happened in the Weimar Republic. See, I remember that from The Eternal Jew, the German movie I always talk about. They said the speculators started speculating, and that's when it all came down. The money started to, you know, degenerate until the point where you had to have a million marks to go to the supermarket to pick up a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk or something. Speculation. And they always call them the Jewish speculators. See, to be a speculator means you control the prices of things just by whatever you say they might be. See? If it rains out today, maybe the price of milk should be doubled. Or maybe if it doesn't rain out, the price of milk should be tripled. Who knows? I don't know. That's speculation. So the stock exchange came to control the whole national economy. The directors of these institutions were, and are without exception, Jews. I say without exception, for the few non-Jews who had a share in them are in the last resort nothing but screens, shop window Christians. Whom one needs in order, for the sake of the masses, to keep up the appearance that these institutions were, after all, founded as a natural outcome of the needs of the economic life of all peoples alike, and were not, as was the fact, institutions which correspond only with the essential characteristics of the Jewish people, and are the outcome of those characteristics. Then Europe stood at the parting of the ways. Europe began to divide in two halves, into West Europe and Central and Eastern Europe. The Jew dividing. The Jew is always dividing. They wanted to divide America into two parts during the Civil War, and one of each of the Rothschild sons was to take control, divide, conquer, divide, take control. So Europe, he says, then Europe stood in the parting ways. Europe began to divide into two halves, into West Europe and Central and Eastern Europe. At first, Western Europe took the lead in the process of industrialization. Especially in England, crowds of farm laborers, sons of farmers, or even ruined farmers themselves, streamed into the towns, and there were formed a new fourth estate. But here one fact is of more importance than we are accustomed to admit. This England, like France, had relatively few Jews. And the consequence of that was that the great masses concentrated in the towns did not come into the immediate contact with this alien nation, and thus feelings of aversion, which must otherwise necessarily have arisen, did not find sufficient nourishment for their development. You see, they weren't in contact with the Jews out in the rural areas, because the Jew always goes to the cities. So they lacked all the people getting together, because these people that were in the rural areas, is what he's saying, didn't have the contact. So they did not arise against the Jews because they had no contact there. In the end, the 50 or 60,000 Jews in England, There was hardly that number in England then. With supreme ease were able to Europeanize themselves that they remained hidden from the primitive eye. Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. There is your chameleon ship. This is right from the movie again, The Eternal Jew. When you see them as they are, they showed them as they are with their beards and their crazy looks and everything. And then they showed them as they were Europeanized. And it was literally scary to watch the chameleon effect take place. Remember, the chameleon effect is an act, and it's a blending in order to take advantage of the population around them. So, he says, with supreme ease, were able to Europeanize themselves, that they remained hidden from the primitive eye of the ordinary member of the public, and as captains of industry, and especially as representatives of capital on a large scale, they could appear no longer as foreigners, but themselves became Englishmen. Hello! There it is, ladies and gentlemen. The chameleon ship. This accounts for the fact. Why do I point these things out to you? Why do I say these things to you? Because when I tell you things, as we go through other materials, do you notice how the dots keep connecting? Do you notice how that you keep getting reconfirmations of things over and over and over from all kinds of different areas? This is Hitler now connecting dots for you. And we've connected dots with all kinds of people. Even the Jews will help you connect these dots. So they were able to portray themselves as Englishmen and melt into the population. You know, when a chameleon gets in front of something, it can just change the colors to where you can practically not even see it. It would be invisible to your naked eye. You just wouldn't even know it was there unless it moved. So he goes on, this accounts for the fact that anti-Semitism in these states could never attain to any native vigor, for the same is true of France. And precisely for this reason, in these countries, it was possible to introduce the system which we have to represent ourselves under the concept of democracy. There it was possible to create a state form whose meaning could only be the mastery of the herd over the intelligentsia, the mastery over true energy through the dead weight of massed numbers. In other words, it must be supremely easy for the Jewish intelligentsia, small in numbers and therefore completely hidden in the body of the British people, so to work upon the masses that the latter, quite unconsciousness of whom they were obeying, in the end did but serve the purposes of this small stratum of society. Are you hearing this? Are you understanding what he's saying? This is brilliant. This is showing you how the control mechanism works. If there's one thing you want to do, is you want to know your enemy. And if you know your enemy is the Jew, I hope you're paying attention to everything I've said in this particular message. Never mind all the rest of the messages. Once you know what the weakness of this enemy is, you can exploit that weakness. Once you know how this fox works, you'll know how it operates and you'll be able to curtail its ways of operating. Do you understand that? Through the press propaganda, and here it is again, through the press propaganda, same yesterday, same today, but not forever. Through the press propaganda, through the use of organs of information, it was possible in England to found the great model parties. Already in those early days, they saw to it shrewdly that Here were always two or three groups apparently hostile to each other, but in fact all hanging on a gold thread. See, that's what democracy is. See? Listen to what he's saying here. This is just brilliance. See, he talked about democracy just before this. So he says, already in those early days, they saw to it shrewdly that there were always two or three groups apparently hostile to each other. Now, don't we have that in America? Don't we have the Democrats against the Republicans, against the Libertarians? But, in fact, all hanging on a golden thread, which means the Jew controls all three parties. But let's continue. The whole designed to take account of a human characteristic, that no longer a man possesses an object, the more readily he grows tired of it. He craves something new. See, that's one of the things that right there. See, right away, these dots just keep coming. I don't mean to keep interrupting, folks, but this is just remarkable. He craves something new. It says in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion that they would always have us looking for something new, change, you know, something new. We're bored of the old ways of these, the old world where our old patriarchs used to have all these ways that were proven right for years and years and years. We know better. We're smarter than them. And we want change and we crave something new all the time. We crave a new materialistic possession. We crave a new woman. We crave a new car. We crave a new government. We crave all kinds of things. Therefore, one needs new parties. The one is in office, the other in opposition. Hello. When the one has played itself out, then the opposition party comes into power. Are you listening to what he's saying? This is remarkable. He's speaking of democracy, and he's telling you just how it goes. You know how many times I heard, if we could just get rid of Bush. See, they played it out. The Republican Party played it out for 12 years or whatever. I think Daddy Bush, I don't know if he was in for two or whatever, but they played it out and then the Democrats came in. And now all you hear people say, if only we could get a Republican in. If only we could just get rid of Obama, everything will get better. Oh, really? Will it? Really? Will it get better? And so he says, I'm going to read this again. The one is in office, the other in opposition. When one has played itself out, the opposition party comes into power. And the party which has had its day is now in its turn the opposition. After 20 years, the new party itself has once more played itself out and the game begins afresh. In truth, this is a highly ingenious mill in which the interests of a nation are ground very small. The interests of a nation are ground very small. As everyone knows, this system is given some such names as self-government of a people. Besides this, we always find two great catchwords, freedom and democracy, used, I might say, as signboards. Freedom, under the term, is understood, at least amongst those in authority who in fact carry on the government. The possibility of an unchecked plundering of the masses of the people, to which no resistance can be offered. The masses themselves naturally believe that under the term freedom, they possess the right to a quite peculiar freedom of motion, freedom to move the tongue and to say what they choose, freedom to move about the streets, etc., a bitter deception. And the same is true of democracy. In general, even in the early days of both England and France, had already been bound with the fetters of slavery, which, with, I might say, a brazen security, these states are fettered with Jewish chains. Now, the word freedom is always something. This came right out of the learned elders, the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. They said they would always use the word freedom as a billboard type of thing, a signboard. It's how you can gather people under the word freedom. An example would be the hippies. Remember, that's all they sang about on stage? Freedom, freedom, yeah, yeah. Freedom from what? Or freedom for what? Freedom for homosexuals? Freedom for Jews? To touch little children? Freedom from God and his laws? Don't tell me Hitler doesn't know what he's talking about here. When I heard this speech, my mouth was open. So he continues. In consequence of this widespread aversion, it was more difficult for the Jew to spread infection in the political sphere, and especially so since traditionally loyalty was centered in a person. The form of the state was a monarchy, and people and power did not lie with an irresponsible majority. Thus, the Jews saw that here it was possible for an enlightened despotism to arise based upon the army, the bureaucracy, and the masses of the people still unaffected by the Jewish poison. The intelligentsia at the time was almost exclusively German. Big business and the new industries were in German hands, while the last reservoir of a people's strength, the peasantry, was throughout healthy. In such conditions, if an industry grew, a fourth estate was formed in the towns. There was a danger that this fourth estate might ally itself with the monarchy, and thus with its support, there might arise a popular monarchy or a popular Kaisertum, which would be ready and willing to give a mortal blow to those powers of international superstate finance, which were at the time beginning to grow in influence. This was not impossible. In the history of German princes, had from time to time found themselves forced, as in the Brandenburg, to turn against the nobility and seek popular support. But this possibility constituted a grave danger for Jewry. If the great masses of the new industrialized workmen had come into the nationalist hands and, like a true social leaven, had penetrated the whole nation, if the liberation of the different estates had followed step by step in an organic development and the state had later looked to them for support, then there would have been created what many hoped for in November of 1918, a national social state. For socialism itself is anything but an international creation. As a noble conception, it has indeed grown up exclusively in Aryan hearts. It owes its intellectual glories only to Aryan brains. It is entirely alien to the Jew. The Jew will always be the born champion of private capital in its worst form, that of unchecked exploitation. Now remember, I told you that we have the Hegelian dialectic going on between capitalism and communism in this country. The Jews are both the capitalists and the communists. You must understand that. And as they pretend to fight one another and put on that show for you, there's a synthesis of the two. And that's exactly what we have here in America. We have democracy. So what Hitler's telling you here is democracy is good for the Jew, and the Jew knows it. because the Jew can control all of it and control the outcome of the elections and can brainwash and propagandize through their media, their controlled media, and through Freemasonic institutions, etc., etc., etc. But this National Socialism, or socialism that the kind he's talking about, the Jew doesn't like anything to do with people that are proud of their own nation, that want to protect their own nation, that love their own nation. It is alien to them, is what he's saying. But to the Aryan people, it is right in our hearts and brains. It's part of our being. So, I'm going to continue from here. The Jew will always be born champion of private capital in its worst form, that of unchecked exploitation. Voltaire, as well as Rousseau, together with our German Fichte and many another, they are all without exception united in their recognition that the Jew is not only a foreign element differing in his essential character, which is utterly harmful to the nature of the Aryan, but that the Jewish people in itself stands against us as our deadly foe, and so will stand against us always and for all time. Is that true, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, yes, it is. It always has been true since the garden, when Yahweh commanded the war between the two seed lines. The only thing is, dear Christian, or dear Jewish version of Christian people, you don't even know that the war is against you. You don't even know that there's a war out for your blood. You don't even know that you're involved in a war and that you've been involved in this war before you, right when you started, when you were born. You're involved in this war from cradle to grave. And your posterity will be involved in this war. Until Yahweh comes back, we will all be involved in this war. These Jews know that they're in the war, and they are putting war to you. When will you recognize this, and when will you begin to act like a warrior instead of a coward like they are? They're cowardly, but you see, they're able to do this through institutions and laws and all sorts of things that aren't even real. So let's begin to smarten up here. What do you think about Mr. Hitler here, huh? I don't hear anybody hating on anybody. Do you? I don't hear anybody talking about controlling the world. Do you? It's the Jew who wants to control the world. It's the Jew that wants to control Europe, not Hitler. That was a lie. So, he says that all of these people know that the Jewish people in itself stands against us as our deadly foe and will so stand against us always and for all time. The master stroke of the Jew was to claim the leadership of the Fourth Estate. He founded the movement both of the Social Democrats and the Communists. There you go again. Now your Hegelian dialectic going on right there. His policy was twofold. He had his apostles in both political camps. Ladies and gentlemen, do you know that there are Republicans that are Jews, all kinds of Jews in the Republican Party? How many times have you heard me say that the Jews and conservatism are like oil and water? They might be in the Republican Party, but they're as far as away from being a Republican as you can be. Mr. George Bush, who's a Jew, and his daddy Bush, who's a Jew, are proof of that. So, we see here his policy was twofold. He had his apostles in both political camps. Amongst the parties of the right, he encouraged those features which were most repugnant to the people: the passion for money, unscrupulous methods in trade which were employed so ruthlessly as to give rise to the proverb, "Business too marches over the corpses," and the Jew attacked the parties of the right. Jews wormed their way into the families of the upper classes. It was from the Jews that the latter took their wives. The result was that in a short time, it was precisely the ruling class which became, in its character, completely estranged from its own people. See what happens when you marry the Jew, Mr. Donald Trump? You become estranged from your own people. I still think you're a Jew, though. But if you're not, you're a race mixer, and this is just what he's talking about right here. If you marry a Jew, you curse your family. You curse your life. You curse the house that you live in. It can, as I'm reading this book about the original Mr. Jacobs, he talks about how many people in the upper class had married with Jews, and he shows the disaster after disaster after disaster of what happened to these people that married along with them. It's a curse from Yahweh, ladies and gentlemen. Now, for some reason, we don't see that with Donald at this point, do we? Okay, so Hitler goes on. And this fact gave the Jew his opportunity with the parties on the left. Here he played the part of the common demagogue. Played the part. Mr. Hitler is very wise here. He knows that the Jew is a chameleon, and he also knows that the Jew is an actor. I've told you these things. Here is your proof again, and I'll keep pointing it out show after show until you finally understand that what I'm telling you is true. Here he played the part of the common demagogue. Two means enabled him to drive away in disgust the whole intelligentsia of the nation from the leadership of the workers. First, his international attitude. For the native intelligence of the country is prepared to make sacrifices. It will do anything for the life of the people, but it cannot believe in the mad view that through the denial of that national life, through a refusal to defend the rights of one's own people, through the breaking down of the national resistance to the foreigner, it is possible to raise up a people and make it happy. That it cannot do. And so it remained at a distance. And the Jew's second instrument was the Marxist theory in and for itself. For directly one went on to assert that property as such is theft. Directly one deserted the obvious formula that only the natural wealth of a country can and should be common property, but that which a man creates or gains through his honest labor. Think about what he's saying there. You see that when a Jew comes into a nation, that they immediately want to stop you liking, you caring about your nation, national pride. The Jew is opposed to national pride, and that's what he's saying here. And it tries to convince people of a nation that nobody should be making money on their own, and that everybody, it should be, all the money should be in the common, you know, belong to all the people. You know, if some don't work, oh, they get some. If some do work, well, we take it away from them and give it to those ones that don't work. Because it's all, you know, this does not work. It never will work. It confuses. It's creating confusion in the nations. You see here in America that they do not want us to have national pride. They are teaching in the colleges that we should love the UN. Well, I don't love the UN, and if I was president, one of the first things I would do is get rid of the UN. So, he says that the public cannot believe in a mad view that through the denial of that national life, through a refusal to defend the rights of one's own people. You see, you notice how England is not defending the rights of their own people. I just saw a news story where there's an orphan girl who's an English girl, and they're going to refuse her the right to live in England, but as many Syrian men that want to come in can come in. This is the way the Jew operates. The Jew wants to break down our togetherness. Division, 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 division. So he says, and the Jew's second instrument was the Marxist theory in and all, and for itself. For directly one went on to assert that property is such theft. Directly one deserted the obvious formula that only the natural wealth of a country can and should be common property. But that which a man creates or gains through his honest gain or labor is his own. Immediately, the economic intelligentsia, with its national outlook. Okay, here we are right here. More and more so to influence the masses that he persuaded those of the right that the faults of the left were the faults of the German workmen. And similarly, he made it to appear that those on the left, I mean to those on the left, that the faults of the right were simply the faults of the so-called bourgeoisie. And neither side noticed that on both sides, the faults were the result of a scheme planned by alien devilish agitators. And only so it is possible to explain how this dirty joke of world history could come to be that stock exchange Jews should become the leaders of a workers' movement. It is a gigantic fraud. World history has seldom seen its like. See, the workers' movement, the labor unions, they work both sides of that party as well. You've got the boss of the company, and then you got his brother so telling you how he's mistreating you, and so they want to start a union. Then pretty soon they're collecting dues from you for the union. Let me tell you a little something about unions. I have a friend that works for the post office and has most of his life. Actually, I guess all of his life. I lost a lot of respect for him. He told me that he's part of the postal union, and they told him during this past election that they had to vote for Obama. That they had to vote for Obama. Did he vote for him? Oh, yes, he did. So as Mr. Hitler says, it is a gigantic fraud. World history has seldom seen its like. Yes, these unions, in other words, they're playing you like the two different people, you know, the company owner, the Jew company owner, and the Jew who's running the union is playing against each other. You understand that? The Hegelian dialectic again, it's the same old story. Division, division, division. So soon as millions of men have had it hammered into them that they are so oppressed and enslaved that it matters not what their personal attitude may be to their people, their state, or economic life, then a kind of passive resistance must result, which sooner or later will do fatal damage to the national economy. Through the preaching of the Marxist economic theory, the national economy must go to ruin. We see the results in Russia. The end of the whole economic life of the state, the handing over of the community to the international world of finance, and the process is furthered through the organization of the political strike. Often there are no adequate economic grounds for a strike, but there are always political grounds and plenty of them. And to this must be added the practical political sabotage of the state. Since the thought of the individual is concentrated on the idea of international solidarity, it is clear that a nation's economic life depends upon the strength of a national state. It does not live on such phrases as appeasement of the peoples or freedom of the peoples. At the moment when no people supports the economic life of a nation, ready to give its protection, at that moment, economic life collapses. Let's read that again. At the moment when no people supports the economic life of a nation, ready to give its protection, at that moment, economic life collapses. Now, they are destroying the middle class in all of our nations. They've taken their businesses that they've stolen from our people through the Federal Reserve Bank Act. They've stolen all the businesses. They've become the merchants. And as you see, there's almost nobody left to support the economic life of this nation. Yes, there's still people working right now, but it's on life support. So what happens when there's no people to support economic life of a nation? Ready to give its protection? At that moment, economic life collapses. The breaking in pieces of a nation's strength is the end of a nation's prosperity. That's what they did symbolically at 9/11, ladies and gentlemen. It was a ritual, a satanic ritual. So, the breaking in pieces of a nation's strength is the end of a nation's prosperity. The national existence must cease altogether. And one can see constantly how wonderfully the stock exchange Jew and the leader of the workers, how the stock exchange organ and the journal of the workers cooperate. They both pursue one common policy and a single aim. Now listen to this. This is what he's trying to say here. This is amazing. Okay? He's kind of talking about what happens with unions. Okay, listen to this. Moses Cohn, on the one side, encourages his association to refuse the workers' demands, while his brother Isaac in the factory incites the masses and shouts, "Look at them! They only want to oppress you. Shake off your fetters." His brother takes care that the fetters are well and truly forged. The stock exchange organ seeks without intermission to encourage fevered speculation and unparalleled corners in grain and in the food of the people, while the workman's newspaper lets off all its guns on the masses, telling them that bread is dearer than this. Dearer, and this, that, and the other is dearer. Up, proletarians, endure it no longer. Down, down with whatever, right? So in other words, what I was telling you is they're playing them on both sides of the coin, you see. And they're working on their emotions. I must continually tell you that your feelings is how you're exploited. You're exploited through your feelings. These Jews and their father, the devil, they know and constantly use your feelings against you. This is why we must be in control of our feelings. This is why we must think rationally, not be swayed in one direction or another by our feelings, because they are going to keep using that against you. So sooner or later, this enemy, I'm warning you, uses your feelings against you with news stories, with gun shootings, with all kinds of programs and movies and songs and dances, etc., etc., etc. And they sway you back and forth in any direction they wish to sway you in. So, number one lesson, get control of your feelings and beware of somebody trying to use your feelings as a weapon against you. You hear what he's saying? This is brilliant stuff right here, what he's saying. These aren't the words of a raging lunatic, ladies and gentlemen. These are the words of somebody that knows what they're talking about, that has a deep understanding of the world around him, and knows he's at war, and knows who the enemy is, and knows the working of the enemy. Why? Because he sought the truth, and the truth set him free. It took a lot of work to know what this man knows. You don't just speak like this and not know and not have gone through a lot of research and seeking. That's all I have to say about it. How long can this process last? It means the utter destruction not only of economic life, but of the people. It is clear that all these apostles who talk their tongues out of their heads, but who spend the night in the Hotel Excelsior, travel in express trains, and spend their leave for their health in Nice. These people do not exert their energies for the love of the people. No, the people is not to profit. That's what he says. It shall merely be brought into dependence on these men. The backbone of its dependence, its own economic life, is to be destroyed, and that it may the more securely relapse into the golden fetters of the perpetual interest slavery of the Jewish race. And this process will end when suddenly out of the masses someone arises to seize the leadership, finds other comrades, and fans into flame the passions which have been held in check and looses them against the deceivers. See, there's where your feelings, save up all your feelings. This is brilliant. I mean, this is just amazing. See, I didn't even catch that when I first heard the thing, but there it is. There's your brilliance. You've been holding your feelings. There'll be a time to let those feelings out, but wait for the right time. See what he says right here? And this process will end when suddenly out of the masses someone arises to seize the leadership, finds other comrades, and fans into flame the passions which have been held in check and looses them against the deceivers. Okay? Save up your feelings in a bank. You'll get to spend your feelings later. Don't spend them all now and let the Jew move you around like clouds without water. So Mr. Hitler goes on, that is the lurking danger, and the Jew can meet it in one way only, by destroying the hostile national intelligentsia. That is the inevitable ultimate goal of the Jew in his revolution. So hear what he says right there. What is the inevitable ultimate goal of the Jew in his revolution? To destroy the hostile national intelligentsia. Make a note of it, ladies and gentlemen. And this aim he must pursue. He knows well enough his economics brings no blessing. His is no master people. He is an exploiter. The Jews are people of robbers. May I tell you that Mr. Timiranis, if I said his name correctly, who wrote the original Mr. Jacobs, says the very same things. And man after man after man after man after man has told you, including Yeshua, including Yahweh, that these people are a people of robbers. So Mr. Hitler continues, he has never founded any civilization, though he has destroyed civilizations by the hundred. He possesses nothing of his own creation to which he can point. Everything that he has is stolen. Foreign peoples, foreign workmen build him his temples. It is foreigners who create and work for him. It is foreigners who shed their blood for him. He knows no people's army. He has only hired mercenaries. That's you, Shabazz Goy military man, in America, in UK, in France, etc. He has only hired mercenaries who are ready to go to death on his behalf. You'll die for the Jew, but you're claiming when you're dying for the Jew over there in Iraq and all these places, you're not dying for the American people. We never told you to go over there. We never authorized you to go into any of those Middle East countries. You have done this for the Jew. You don't tell me that I should worship you and bow down to you because you were fighting for my freedom. BS. You were fighting for paper shekels, which are worthless. You are fighting for my enemy. You are fighting for the enemy of Yahweh. And you can pray to that Jesus, whoever that Jesus is that you're praying to, that Jewish Jesus, who isn't real at all. That's a demon. That's not, Jesus is not Jewish. You're praying to some Jew. You're worshiping some Jew. So you pray to Jesus before you go in and destroy all these people's lives. You're not doing that for me. I don't want you over there touching anybody's lives over there. You have no business over there. So he continues. He has no art of his own. Bit by bit, he has stolen it all from the other peoples or has watched them at work and then made his copy. He does not even know how merely to preserve the precious things which others have created. As he turns the treasures over in his hand, they are transformed into dirt and dung. You know what Mr. Timiennis said in the original Mr. Jacobs? He said, the Jew is the kind of a person that if he became king, he tried to sell the jewels in his crown. What does that tell you? Think about that. Think about the despicable, just, you know, I don't know what really how to explain it to you. I'm just full of disgust and disdain for these people. If he became king, he'd try to sell the jewels in his crown. So, Mr. Hitler continues, he knows that he cannot maintain any state for long. That is one of the differences between him and the Aryan. True, the Aryan also has dominated other peoples. But how? He entered on the land and cleared the forests. Out of the wildernesses, he has created civilizations. But see, that's what the Aryan is supposed to do. That's what the white Caucasian people were sent here to do, to tend the garden, This Yahweh has given us the responsibility to tend the garden. We're not talking about a garden like a regular garden. We're talking about this earth and the families. We are to be over the families of this earth. We are to be in control of it. And that's what we did. We are to tend the garden. There is no other race upon this planet that is qualified to tend this garden. And if you look into it, you can certainly see that the blacks couldn't tend the garden, right? Take a look at South Africa right now. Take a look at the cities that they have control over, like Detroit, Michigan. They can't even tend that, never mind anything else, never mind the world. They're not even qualified. They're like little children. They can't even lead themselves, never mind lead the world. The Chinese, same deal. They're not up to the task. There is nobody. The Jews can't tend the world. Look what they do with it. There's only one race that is capable, that is qualified, that is quantified, and that has been given the task to tend this garden, and that is the Adamic race, the true Israel of the Bible, the Caucasian people. I don't even think you can argue with that. As a matter of fact, I know you can't argue with it. You may think you can, but I think if you think about it for long enough, you'll figure it out real quick. So, I'm going to read this part again. That is one of the differences between him and the Aryan. True, the Aryan also has dominated other peoples. But how? He entered on the land and cleared the forests. Out of the wildernesses, he has created civilizations. Remember, Abraham would be the father of many nations, a company of nations. Who did that? The Aryan. Not the black man. Not the Muslim. Not the Chinaman. Not the Arab. The Aryan. He has, so far as their capacities permitted, incorporated them into his state, and through him art and science were brought to flower. Art and science were brought to flower. In the last resort, it was the Aryan and the Aryan alone who could form states and could set them on their path for future greatness. Yes, every great nation of the world. When Egypt was at its height, it was a white nation. Don't believe the nonsense that it was a mulatto nation or something like that. That's when it went down to nothing. That's when it fell. All that the Jew cannot do, and because he cannot do it, therefore, all his revolutions must be international. They must spread a pestilence, as a pestilence spreads. He can build no state and say, "See here, here stands the state, a model for all. Now copy us." Is Mr. Hitler right then? Yes, he is. Is he right now? Oh, yes. How about the little state of Israel? Would you like to copy that? They occupy that land over there. They don't own it. They just pretend they own it. Almost 68 years now, and they still don't even have a little land. So Mr. Hitler's right back then, and he's right now. He must take care that the plague does not die, that it is not limited to one place, or else in a short time this plague hearth would burn itself out. So he is forced to bring every mortal thing to an international expansion. For how long? until the world sinks in ruins and brings him down with it in the midst of the ruins. And that is exactly right. This man has more common sense. This man has more common sense than all the people in America put together. And you think he's evil? The most evil man on the world? That ever lived? Yeah. That process today in Russia is practically complete. The whole of present-day Russia has nothing to show beyond a ruined civilization. Yes, because the Tsar was the richest man in the world and had a wonderful nation until those Jews from America went up there, the Bolshevik Jews, and destroyed it and stole the Tsar's money, which Mr. Putin should be out putting a lawsuit and putting up a world tribunal with no Jews on the tribunal and getting his money back with interest. It's still out there. It's still Russia's money. They still own that money. The whole of present-day Russia has nothing to show beyond a ruined civilization, a colony ripe for the development through alien capital. And even this capital, in order to supply resources and labor for its practical work, must introduce Aryan intellects, since, for this, again, the Jew is useless. Here, too, he is all rapacity, never satisfied. He knows no ordered economy. He knows no ordered body of administrators. Over there in Russia, he is laying his hands on everything. They take the nobles' diamonds to help the people. Hey, that's just like I just said about the, you see what I mean? The nobles' diamonds would be like the crown, the diamonds or the jewels in the crown of a king. Mr. Temenyaev said that he would sell those gems. Well, this is what these Jews are. You see, you're getting confirmation after confirmation after confirmation after confirmation. They take the nobles' diamonds to help the people, to help them, yeah. The diamonds then stray into foreign societies and are no more seen. He seizes to himself the treasures of the churches, but not to feed the people. Oh, no. Everything wanders away and leaves not a trace behind. In his greed, he has become quite senseless. He can keep hold of nothing. He has only within him the instinct for destruction. And so he himself collapses with the treasure that he has destroyed. It is a tragic fate. We have often grown excited over the death of a criminal. If an anarchist is shot in Spain, we raise a mighty howl over the sacrifice of valuable human blood. And here in the East, 30 million human beings are being slowly martyred, done to death, some with the scaffold, some by machine guns, millions upon millions through starvation. A whole people is dying, and now we can perhaps understand how it was possible that formerly all of the civilizations of Mesopotamia disappeared without a trace, so that one can only with difficulty find in the desert sand the remains of these cities. We see how in our own day whole countries die out under the scourge of God, and we see how this scourge is threatening Germany. 2. And how with us our own people in mad infatuation is contributing to bring upon itself the same yoke, the same misery. See, nothing's changed, ladies and gentlemen. See what he just said? This scourge of God is the Jew. And we shall see how this scourge is threatening Germany too. And how with us our own people in mad infatuation is contributing to bring upon itself the same yoke, the same misery. People, what is going on? Do you see why you never saw these words in English? Can you understand now Now, I'm not going to be able to finish this speech, but I don't care. I don't care if it takes 3 weeks to finish the speech. It can be read in 35 minutes. But it is full of gold. And I knew it the moment I heard it. And this is only one speech. Imagine this is 1922. This isn't even Hitler when he's chancellor. In 33, this is 1922. Right? Am I correct on that? Or 1921, I think it is. Okay. So I'm going to just continue on just a little bit more. We know that the revolution, which began in 1918, has covered perhaps but the first third of its course. Two things, however. There are which must scourge it forward upon its way. Economic causes and political causes. On the economic side, the ever-growing distress in the political sphere and in the political sphere are not nearly all Germans in their hearts. Let each one admit it. In despair, when they consider the situation, which leaves us quite defenseless in the face of a Europe which is so hostile to Germany. And why is Europe hostile? We see how over there is this other Europe. It is not the peoples which agitate against us. It is the secret power of the organized press which ceaselessly pours new poison into the hearts of these peoples. I'm going to stop right there because, I mean, well, let me just finish this part here. And who are these bandits of the press? The brothers and the relatives of the publishers of our own newspapers? And the capital source which provides the energy which here and there drives them forward is the Jewish dream of world supremacy. See, they said he wanted world supremacy, but they want world supremacy. But what he's saying here is disturbing, but revealing. What he says here, and why is Europe hostile? We see how over there, in this other Europe, it is not the peoples which agitate against us. See, it is not the peoples who want to go to war with Germany that were in the UK. It is not the peoples in the United States that want to go over and destroy the people in the Middle East's lives. What is it? It is the secret power of the organized press, which ceaselessly pours new poison into the hearts of these peoples. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm proud to read this man's speech, and we have a ways to go. Yes, we do. But I've got to tell you, I think you see now, and this was the purpose of this message, I think you see your enemy for who they really are, and I think you understand now what's going on in your own country, and I think now you understand how we got to where we're at, and you also understand that this man is not even close to being the most evil man that has ever lived on the face of the earth, and the German people aren't evil either. We now see the evil for what it is, for who it is, and how it operates. I shall go through more of this speech until it is accomplished. And I must tell you, I'm very, very happy that Yahweh has shown us all of this. I hope and pray that you begin to wake up today. I hope and pray that you begin to know who your enemy is, to know that you are involved in a war, And may it make you closer to one another, to the people of your own race. May we identify with one another because we are in the same situation. May we be of common mind, heart, and soul, and spirit, and purpose. And I must tell you something that I will talk about sometime. I've realized what my purpose is. You see, I often love to ask people, what is your purpose? Well, my purpose is to clarify. Notice how I do clarify the recordings that you can't hear. Notice how I clarify things and try to simplify it so that we can all understand it better. That's what I do. I'm a clarifier. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James. Until next time, study to show thyself approved. Be sure to join us on the Eurofolk Radio Network for our new show, Classic Comparé. Yes, his teachings never sounded better unless you heard him live. Classic Comparé is featured on Saturdays from 11 o'clock to 12:30 U.S. Eastern Time. That's 6 o'clock to 7:30 p.m. UK GMT Time. Be sure to join us and enjoy one of identity's greatest preachers.
Tune in tomorrow. Same cat time, same cat channel.
To the Batmobile. This could be the break we've been looking for.
Oh, Catwoman. Catwoman, will you never learn?
So you didn't tell the truth.
Did you ever hear of a crook who did?
You filthy criminals.
It doesn't pay to court disaster, Robin.
She's playing right into our hands. I planned it all this way.
You're listening to the Eurofolk Radio Network here at eurofolkradio.com.
Hi, this is David James with the Eurofolk Radio Network here at eurofolkradio.com. Be sure to check out our new show, Founding Fathers, Wednesdays, 5:30 to 7 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time or 10:30 to 12 a.m. UK GMT.